Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. It's September 30th, 2006. Are we on the eve of an October surprise? The capitulation of the Democratic congressional leadership, especially the Senate leadership this last week, in refusing to fight the Bush-Cheney assault on the U.S. Constitution, and also the assault on the longstanding international agreements such as those in the Geneva Convention for treatment of prisoners, makes it even more likely that the administration will launch a military strike against Iran, possibly before the November election. The next issue of the Executive Intelligence Review will feature a lead story by Jeffrey Steinberg, which details precisely why this is likely. Unfortunately, what we saw with the Senate leadership this last week in giving in to Bush confirms the warning issued by Lyndon LaRouche in his September 6th webcast that these Democrats are behaving like eunuchs. And that was a prescient warning by LaRouche, and we saw, unfortunately, that it was acted out in the capitulation this week. And this was in spite of all the evidence which has emerged of the deadly incompetence of the Bush administration's Iraq war, the lying that went into it, the national intelligence estimate that came out and said the war is getting worse, terrorism is getting worse, and in fact, that the great claim of President Bush that he's keeping us safer is belied by the growth of terrorist movement not only in Iraq but worldwide, the anger against the United States. And yet in spite of that, the Democrats did not fight. Is it that they're fearful of being called soft on terror if they oppose Bush? And of course you realize that as soon as this vote took place, the Bush administration was saying that the Democrats are the party of cut and run, that the Democrats are soft on terror, and so on. So today we're going to look at what Hillary Clinton once called the vast right-wing conspiracy in the media. But we're going to go right to the top. We're going to look at the network which took over sections of the nation's media, but also the nation's intelligence community after the death of Franklin Roosevelt. This is the network which imposed what Lyndon LaRouche has called Trumanism. And a key operative in that network is John Train. Now, with us today on the show from the EIR is prominent historian Anton Chaitkin. Tony is one of the authors of the famous unauthorized biography of George Bush Sr. He's also the author of one of the articles in this week's Executive Intelligence Review feature, which is on John Train and the banker's secret government. Tony's article is on the networks that are taking over television, John Train's fascist capture of television. We'll also be joined, as usual, by a panel of members of the LaRouche Youth Movement. We have with us today Michael Kirsch from Boston and Leandra Bernstein from Seattle. So, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hello, Harley.
Well, let's start at the top. Who is John Train?
John Train is a New York-based international financier. He's described as an American Tory, which means that his family and he are from a self-selected group of those in Boston and New York who are hostile to the United States from the time of the American Revolution, allied to the British bankers and the British nobility. And we first ran into, became deeply aware of John Train back in the middle 1980s, when we were told about John Train's putting together a series of meetings of the Justice Department, of the media, his faction in the media, intelligence community people, and the ADL, and others that were assembled at his home for a series of meetings to try to attack Lyndon LaRouche.
This is the famous Get LaRouche Task Force.
Yes, that resulted soon afterwards in prosecutions and jailing of Lyndon LaRouche and many of his associates. Why did Train do this? This started in April of 1983. In 1982 and in 1983, prior to this assault on LaRouche, Lyndon LaRouche had interacted with the President of Mexico and the President of the United States, José López Portillo and Ronald Reagan, to change the policies of both countries. López Portillo repudiated the debts of Mexico after working this out with Lyndon LaRouche. Wall Street and London bankers didn't like that too much. Kissinger was insane against this. And then Ronald Reagan took LaRouche's idea for a defensive anti-missile system to be shared with the Soviets as a way of backing the entire world out of the Cold War and the attempt by the Anglo-Americans to get a world government. So they said, this has got to be stopped.
Now, Tony, just so our listeners know this, I think it's important that both in the case of López Portillo and Reagan, there was a direct request to Lyndon LaRouche from these leaders to help them under these circumstances. López Portillo brought in LaRouche at the point at which the bankers were threatening to shut down Mexico's economy.
Right.
And in the case of Reagan, Lynn was actually brought in through the National Security Agency to conduct negotiations, back-channel negotiations with the Soviets.
National Security Council, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then who is trained in this? You have to look back at his family and his association in Wall Street in London. This goes back to those people like Aaron Burr, who were enraged against the success of the American Revolution, who are assassins in their temperament as well as their assignment. Murderous rage. It's rage against the American institutions that are independent, where you set up a government that has some power. You want to set up private networks associated with the old money power, the old families. And the murderous rage continues into the 19th and 20th century. John Train's grandfather, Charles H. Koster, C-O-S-T-E-R, was the partner of J.P. Morgan, in charge of finishing the takeover of American railroads. Another Train relative, Francis Train, was working with the British intelligence to destroy the Union Pacific Railroad back in the middle of the 19th century to take it away from nationalists. And these guys took power. Train's faction, the Morgan faction, took power over American affairs in 1901 with the assassination of President McKinley and putting Teddy Roosevelt in. It was only Franklin Roosevelt, Teddy's distant cousin, who brought back the American Revolution idea. And these guys were full of venom and rage against Roosevelt for restoring the power of America, the nation, and the government against this private Anglo-American power. Following World War II, John Train and his uncle, George Train, went to Europe in the 1950s on a project. This is after Roosevelt is dead, on a project to restore the power of these private networks that had installed Hitler. They had paid for Hitler's to take power in Germany. Hitler was dead, but so was Franklin Roosevelt. And John Train and other family members went to Europe, sponsored by something called the International Rescue Committee, to work. John Train was head of the Paris Review magazine, which was financed by Alan Dulles' Central Intelligence Agency, this faction of the intelligence community, the people still working with the fascists.
All right, Tony, we've just gone through quite a bit, and I want to just break it down a little bit for people. You're listening to the LaRouche Show, and you're hearing from Anton Chaitkin, historian, journalist, and our guest today, and we're talking about the bankers faction, which is opposed to the American system of economics. Now, in his webcast on September 6th, Lyndon LaRouche emphasized the distinction between Franklin Roosevelt's economic nationalism And the policies that this bankers faction implemented under Truman right after Roosevelt had died. What is it that they intended to do? What was their goal, and what was their beef with FDR?
Their goal was to break down the power of nations and to restore the project for a world empire to be achieved through the most brutal methods possible. If Hitler couldn't do it, they'd get some other form of fascism to help them achieve this. John Train's uncle, who went to Europe with him at the same time, George Train, negotiated the American treaty with the surviving fascist dictator Francisco Franco. This treaty was negotiated while Truman was U.S. president, repudiating FDR's hatred for fascism. And then the two of these guys, the nephew and the uncle, came back to New York and became partners in John Train's firm in New York City. This is the place where these salons took place against LaRouche. Their objective was to crush independent nations in South America, in Europe, the United States of America, Mexico, but particularly the United States, to say that we have to eliminate the heritage of national power and go back to a world in which the only private finance, which is entirely covert, is never subject to public knowledge, let alone public elections.
Tony, in the Bush biography that you authored, you made the point and demonstrated clearly that this was the faction associated with the Harriman family, but also Prescott Bush. And you identified the way from the 30s up through 1942 that this banking faction was promoting Hitler.
Yes. Averell Harriman's partner, Prescott Bush, grandfather of the current president. The Harriman firm was the chief depository for the Nazi Party fundraising. Internationally. And after the war, Averell Harriman personally supervised the national security operations of the Truman administration. Averell Harriman appointed John Train's uncle to negotiate with Francisco Franco the treaty, restoring Franco to some sort of legitimacy and giving U.S. air bases there. That treaty was signed by Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, who had been Averell Harriman's lawyer intermediary with Hitler when Harriman and Bush made the deals with Hitler in the 20s and 30s up to just about the beginning of World War II. So this is a very small clique of private financiers and their lawyers and their intelligence community, the two Dulles brothers, Allen of the CIA and John Foster, who became Secretary of State. Both of them were lawyers for Prescott Bush and Averell Harriman. And these are people assigning John Train and his uncle and Leo Chern and other people to their roles within the United States intelligence community. After World War II, we had the emergence of what is now called the conservative movement. Irving Kristol says there were three stages to this, to his movement. The first stage is William F. Buckley and his National Review, which is simply the continuation of the fascist movement of the 30s and 40s, in which his family played quite a part. This goes over into Pinochet. The second stage is Irving Kristol and the neoconservatives in the 1970s. And the third stage is the theocracy of the radical religious right. All three stages of this thing come out of this this group of bankers we've identified as the synarchists and the people that are promoting fascism. That group, as a group, had designated John Train to run this salon in 1983 and 4. And then in around 2002, when Lyndon LaRouche again took the lead really by himself in U.S. politics, to attack the Cheney cabal that was leading the United States to hell and the world to hell. LaRouche and his associates published the Children of Satan series and went after Cheney in national politics in a way that rubbed everybody's faces in it. And we began to turn the tide in U.S. politics. So we, starting right around then, we see John Train and his friends in this so-called conservative movement, Horowitz, the neocons, the gang that is now using various aspects of the media, deploying their controlled assets, again, in the media, to attack and run slanders against Lyndon LaRouche because of the fact that we're pledged now, and LaRouche is committed, as he has been since he started his movement, to taking the world out of the hands of this psychotic oligarchy.
And we'll just fill this in as we go on in the show. In fact, the same grouping that you've just identified, showing how from the Morgans in the 19th century through the opposition to Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s and the imposition of the Truman policy, and we want to talk a little bit more about this Trumanism in a couple of minutes, but this is the same network that today is using wars and free trade, so-called globalization, to impose a global fascist economy, global fascist top-down control. So this is the story that's in the EIR this week on the John Train and the banker's secret government.
A couple of anecdotes to give people a sensual flavor of John Train. When he was at Harvard, they had their annual Boston commemoration of the ride of U.S. Patriot Paul Revere, who alerted people that the British were invading. And that was commemorated every year. So John Train, one of those years, while a student at Harvard, dressed up in a British red coat uniform, military uniform, and disrupted this commemoration and began shouting insults at the commemorators. And he had people around him who were these cynics within Harvard's, elite, fancy family student body, cheering him on as he did this. And this is precisely the state of mind of the assassins that we have seen throughout history, like Aaron Burr. In April of this year, 2006, John Train wrote an article that said that his grandfather, working as a founding partner with J.P. Morgan, understood what people with money were supposed to do with industry. They must never invest in building up an industry. They should only buy up industries to make money for those stockholders and investors who are out to make money, period. And he said the conclusion of this was that I understand from my family background that the Ford Motor Company and the General Motors Company leaders should have had the courage to amputate their physical companies and lay off their workers and destroy those companies so that the stockholders could get their money out of this deal. And that is the idea. It's this murderous rage against the productive idea of the United States on behalf of a group of people, a group of parasites that feel they should be in charge of running the world.
If you have a question for Tony, you can send it to us via email. We'll take your emails at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And if you want to get copies of the material that we've been producing on this faction's attack on the United States and on the LaRouche movement, you can give us a call, a toll-free number at 800-929-7566. Now, Tony, just before we bring in the panel of LaRouche Youth Movement members, let's take up this the role of John Train in targeting LaRouche. It actually started before the Reagan's announcement of the SDI. including some very unsavory figures such as Roy Cohn and bringing in a hack journalist by the name of Dennis King. I'm referring to the famous Our Town slander series against LaRouche in 1979. Can you tell us something about that?
There was originally a project run through the New York Times, the Morgan newspaper in New York City, to block slander, attack, bring about the murder of LaRouche one way or another. And we checkmated that by running a kind of a sting on the New York Times.
Also called good counterintelligence.
Good counterintelligence. We seem to know them better than they knew themselves from studying their history. So this attack, this slander on LaRouche was farmed out to a criminal of the lower level. Now, these guys at the level of John Train are criminal families going back generations, international criminal families, but they're respectable international criminals. They also, on occasion, work with less respectable criminals, such as Hitler or such as Joe McCarthy's lawyer named Roy Cohn, who also happened to be the main lawyer in New York City for the mafia, for the American mafia, for the mafia up in Canada, for the Jewish mafia, for the Italian mafia, for the killers, including possibly the killers of Kennedy. So Roy Cohn was in charge of a little giveaway newspaper called Our Town, which was published on the east side of Manhattan in association with people around William F. Buckley. And they hired this character, Dennis King, who was somebody in the pay of the intelligence community, to run attacks, slanders against Lyndon LaRouche. He had been writing for the High Times magazine, attacking Lyndon LaRouche for his anti-drug opinion, saying LaRouche is going to take your drugs away. So Dennis King came in there to this hired little throwaway on the east side of New York, Our Town, and began writing a series of slanders against Lyndon LaRouche. If I remember, this included calling him an anti-Semite. I don't know if he was called a KGB agent, certainly a Nazi. Whatever else could be pulled up out of the trick bag of Roy Cohn and the John Train circles in New York City. And this then was reified and brought out. These slanders were trotted out again and again in later years. And when the John Train Salon in 83 and 84 met with the Wall Street Journal, the Reader's Digest, which was closely held by this group, and other publications, NBC, the same slanders were put through against LaRouche by these more respectable outfits.
And this was designed to help create the environment in which the prosecution of LaRouche went on,
exactly.
Beginning in 1984 until his frame-up and conviction by the same network. So we'll talk some more about this. I'd like to bring in one of our LaRouche Youth Movement members, Michael Kirsch, who's with us from Boston. Michael actually had a close encounter with the John Train operation on Wall Street at present. We were there handing out copies of this issue of the EIR. Michael, why don't you give us a report on our deployment into John Train's territory?
Yeah, good day, Harley. I'll tell you, we got as close as we could get. I have a lot to say about it. I think the first thing to say is that this nest, this anti-American Tory nest, is no longer a secluded secret. And after what we did that day, I can say that now the the people in John Train's building know who he is, but almost more importantly at this rate is that John Train knows that they know. Because what we did is some of us decided to go down, two of us actually went down with 14 bundles of the new ERR, which people should call in, email and get a copy of, and we went down sneaking around, poking to see what we could do at his building at 100 Park Street. People are encouraged to visit. Park Avenue.
And 40th Street.
One block away from Grand Central Station. People are encouraged to go down there and drop off more EARs for John Train. Now, we went up to the, there was a middle-aged man who took a look at our EIR when I walked in to ask to go up to the 27th floor and hand deliver it myself. And I was told that I could not, but that he took his lunch breaks up there. And he knew John Train. He said he looked at the cover. Oh, yeah, this is John Train. Of course, he hadn't quite looked at what the content was yet. So we went back out in the corner and just started handing these things out, asking people, do you know John Train? And people say, oh, who's that? And we say, he's the guy they sent to get LaRouche. Or he's the anti-American Tory. We were getting discussions with people out there for a while, and saying his name, broadcasting his name in the corner, which people had apparently never done before. And at a certain point, tensions started to be creating around the entrance of the office and just down the street where I was, where you had a situation where. Some of the employees started coming out and seeming very upset, and you had a kerfuffle around the entrance with some people saying, "Is that the guy who's got the private security?" Certain people on a smoke break, and exclaiming that that it was indeed the guy. They eagerly took the EIR. They were interested to see what we were doing out here, and eventually, this middle-aged man in his 50s or so. Came down the street, very, very obviously enraged, and said to me after I asked him what the response was on the 27th floor to the EIR that he had brought up there and hand delivered to John Train's office, and he said, "Well, he wasn't too well." Let me get the exact quote here because.
Be careful! This is a family show, Michael.
Oh, this is a family show.
Yes.
We were going after these parasitical families.
All right. Well, he said something along the lines. He said exactly. He wasn't too bleeping happy, I'll tell you.
Okay.
I want to keep that for the show. So at that point, we said, all right, this is war. Obviously, we've drawn blood. This is what we wanted to do. And now we knew he was upset. So we decided we'd stay out front. Couple more hours.
Now, Michael, we're going to have to break right now, and we'll come right back to you to get the rest of your report on the invasion of John Train's territory. Let me just tell people they're listening to The LaRouche Show. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday. You can pick it up at LaRouchePub.com. It's also archived, so you can listen to this, get your friends to listen to it, and you can go onto the LaRouchePub.com site. Over on the left-hand side, you'll see the entrance for the LaRouche Show. And you can go back and see all the shows we've done over the recent years that pertain to immediately significant breaking developments, and in particular the role of Lyndon LaRouche and his movement and the LaRouche Youth Movement in intervening in world history. Now, for those of you who realize that we're on the eve of an October surprise, possibly, and that we have to do something about this. I'm going to give you a number to call to get information, to get activated, to make contributions, to order literature, so that you can participate in the drive to stop Bush and Cheney, to impeach them, to get a Democratic majority in spite of the poor quality of the leadership of the Democrats. We still need a Democratic majority to stop Bush and Cheney. So you can give us a call at 800-929-7566 and become part of the movement to change not just the country but the world by exposing and defeating people such as those we're talking about today, the families typified by John Train. So call us at 800-929-7566. I would like to tell you to send us emails. My computer has gone down. I don't know if George can fix that in there in the studio. But we will take your emails at radio@larouchepub.com if we can get them up on the computer. So, Michael, you were just reporting to us the developments around the deployment this week of LaRouche Youth Movement members to John Train's office. Basically, as you said, John Train knows we were there. He now knows that he's not a secret. What's next in this?
Well, let me finish with the
Go
report
ahead.
At the seat of the office, and let me add a statement around this thing. So at this point, as you said, we've smoked out some of these Tories, and I would say that a good couple hundred people who know John Train and who work in this area have now received that EIR.
Let me just point out, that's the firm of John Train. It's called Train Babcock. At 100 Park Avenue, New York City.
We were asking people, you know, do you know John Train? And largely we were handing them out to the people who seemed to have known him. And as I say, a lot of them were quite displeased. You ended up having some people coming up from the building wanting extra EIRs to take up to the building. So, as Harley stated, yes, now we've smoked out these guys. And I would add, in terms of what we found this day and the also to sort of give people a sense of what we're doing on the offensive with the CIR, because it's important for listeners to understand the method by which we are going not only to bring down the neocon faction behind Cheney, who are launching this war in October, but the method of the approach that we're moving to save the nation as a whole is that this group, these people like Michael Adeen, Felix Roatan, John Train, who are now pushing, you know, international overthrows of governments around the world, we've gotten the intelligence on these groups, not sitting back and getting on the internet, but in these types of deployments, going in the face of the enemy, and then finding what the response is to our deployment, we get certain leads that we then investigate, such as, and it, maybe Harley and Anton, we want to say something on this, is that this EIR partly came out of a response to a pamphlet we got out last spring in attacking John Train's association with the privatization of social security networks. And John Train's movement then responded, saying, "We're not too pleased with this. We want to press charges of some sort." So it's in us on the offensive, which we get a lead, then we come out with even more deep understanding of the enemy, and that's exactly the approach we're taking for this upcoming election, and for these types of things. So.
Michael, we'll come back to you in a couple of minutes. I want to just follow that up with a question for Tony, and then we'll bring in Leandra. But Tony, given the prominence of this Train network, or the importance, let's say, of their role in creating the neocons, from your investigations, how widely known is the network? I mean, we name the names going back to Lovestone, James Jesus Angleton, the Dulles brothers, but also people who were in the Reagan administration, people in the Bush administration. How well known is someone like Train?
Oh, nobody knows John Train, except you know, people in finance. He writes these arcane books about finance. What the problem is that the two fields of what's taught in school and what is on the media are both, to a large extent, determined by this same network. So that you have there was a quotation from John Train quoting Northcote Parkinson, Sir Cyril Northcote Parkinson, his mentor, saying that leftists have taken over the economics profession on campuses, which isn't true. So therefore, how can we control the minds of the people? We should take over television. It's important that business, quote unquote, should take over television. By business, he means the hardcore right-wing fascists like Northcote Parkinson and John Train. And the project that John Train got into in the late 1980s to take over television in the United States, public television and other outlets, other media outlets, he started when a friend of theirs in the government was in charge, was the head of the National Endowment for Humanities, that is, was in charge of government funding and began to move that whole apparatus of government oversight and funding of media in their direction. And that person was Lynn Cheney. Lynn Cheney was the head of NEH when this little group in working with her, working with Train, working with others, began stepping up their control over new branches of the media, particularly television and then alternative weeklies and things like this.
Well, I'd like to bring in Leandra at this point because and Michael has some experience with this recently, because many people in major cities in this country are assaulted by this network without even knowing it, because there are these so-called alternative weeklies or the giveaways. In Houston, there's the Houston Press. In Los Angeles, the LA Weekly. And what we discovered is that both in Seattle and Boston in the recent period, that these weeklies have been attacking us. Leandra, why don't you tell us about the strange one up in Seattle called the Seattle Stranger?
All right. I guess that's fair. I mean, Tony gave an idea of some of these ordering networks, and now can look at some of the reflections or the shadows of these networks. Basically, in the past 2 months since July, we've had four articles written about us. Where in one incident, two people threw water balloons at us. We were down on by the university and tossed some water balloons. We called in the police, and the stranger wrote an article basically encouraging this kind of behavior to continue. Later on, we had a real interesting deployment against us. This guy dumped about a gallon of Crisco on our table, and as well as a 15-pound bag of flour.
It's on the literature table.
Yeah, on the we had two different tables set up on a deployment on Broadway, one of these major streets, by a community college.
All you needed was some sugar, and you could have made some cupcakes.
Yeah, apparently the guy was a baker, but but we had charges brought against this baker, and again the stranger wrote an article basically saying, "Man, these LaRouches, what a bunch of crybabies! It's just flour, it's just oil." And I mean, to get a sense of the lawfulness of this kind of deployment. What we've been doing for a while, our intervention into the Democratic Party, we've just run six precinct committee officers. Three of them were unopposed. One of our precinct committee officers was endorsed by the district chair when no one else would endorse his candidacy. We've been going to these district meetings, bringing up impeachment resolutions, the Army Corps of Engineer resolutions, and others relating to the Emergency Recovery Act, and these have been brought to the floor and discussed by the different precincts. And then we had a great meeting with the Washington Democratic Party state chairman. About five of us went out to beer with him, and we organized him around basically his big shift was when we were talking about the impending global economic and financial disintegration, and then LaRouche's solutions and the ERA. And it was his response was great. I mean, he freaked out. It was like he just kind of stared at us, and he said, "With all of this going on, why do you guys smile so much?"
So, Leandra, you would say that what we've seen in recent weeks, and I know you've been a member for, what, almost a couple of years now?
Less than a year and a half.
Year and a half. Well, in recent, since you've been a member, you've seen a significant growth of influence in the LaRouche movement inside the Democratic Party and just in general in the greater Seattle area.
Yeah. With the youth contacts, just raw stats, 2 weeks ago we got 167 contacts. A week ago, 210. This week, and we're out deploying today by the university, we got 320 contacts. Mm. We've had two new recruits since July. We had 70 contacts at the Puget Sound Community College, mm-hmm. and we held a meeting there just this week.
All right, and Michael, we also had an attack on us in Boston from one of these alternative papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the most relevant thing to say about that is, there's this newspaper called The Dig, The Weekly Dig, and, they've run about seven different articles since the Boston 2004. Now, a couple of them were explicitly on LaRouche. You had others where LaRouche was just mentioned and slandered. So there's a little nest of anti-LaRouche's in there, and as we've recently figured out now, due to the research that is going to be pulled together this upcoming week into possibly an EIR issue, that we have a national network of these newspapers that are running this anti-LaRouche operation. Now, specifically with this sect of it, we had one woman who contacted one of our – well, it came up to the table and demanded that she get invited to the meeting but wouldn't leave her name and phone and was really against using the phone, gave an email, and engaged then in a correspondence with one of our organizers for quite some time under the name Lisa Berlay, which someone put her up to using that code name. People don't know – Chip Berlay, as Anton and Harley were going through, was one of the leading stoners in the 80s being used up against us, which you guys can elaborate more on if you'd like.
Interestingly, just for the background, his real name is John Foster Chip Berlay. John Foster as in John Foster Dulles.
Ah.
Go ahead, Michael. Yeah. We'll get back to Tony in a second to put this in the bigger context.
Okay. So this girl was sort of a meek, the way she was described, meek, fragile girl who had to drink tall cups of coffee to get the courage up to run what she thought was a very secretive mission, because she thoroughly wanted to avoid the office for about 16 emails, wanted to meet in a coffee shop, get some intelligence from our organizer. And every time the organizer had any contact with her, he said she had a huge cup of coffee to get her up, to get the nerve up. In any case, what happened was she came to a couple of meetings and wrote one of these trashy articles in The Dig, describing us as a group that didn't exist, so forth. I think the content of this thing is really that pretty much irrelevant. What you have with most of these articles, you get certain people can read them out of context and say, this seems like an honest opinion of some young girl who's a little confused. But the central issue with all these articles is they've all, and I looked at the one that in fact just came out yesterday. We have a new article written by a man in Boston, a very long article describing how to outflank the LaRouche's from a different website that's tied to the Dig, I think. And with all these articles, you have a complete leaving out absence of anything that we're as a political movement are doing, anything that LaRouche has actually really said, and you have this sort of a strange, disconnected piecemeal approach to disorient and confuse people.
Well, Michael,
I think you need to say about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, let me just take this now back to Tony, because we saw this, and actually this bears the paw print of another train operation, which is called the American Family Foundation, which again was the operation that was deployed by Train and these networks against LaRouche in the 80s. What can you tell us about that, Tony?
Let's see. Go back to the foundations. Northcote Parkinson Foundation. That's John Train is the chairman. The American Family Foundation is a sister group to John Train's and John Train and his salon. It comes out of a group of intelligence professionals on this ultra right wing side. They run propaganda about LaRouche, and they have, for example, a group down in Argentina that runs propaganda against what they call cults down in Argentina. That arm of the American Family Foundation is a regular contributor to John Train's organization in New York City. Although what connection anyone would ever find, what that has to do with anything, no one would ever know. But this is a something that was developed in New York City by this group of the intelligence community back in the. In the 1950s and 60s, it involved financiers that had been promoting Hitler earlier, like the Papa Watson of IBM. But I'd like to get directly to what we were just talking about in Boston and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you, Harley and also Michael, wasn't there an article in that same paper in Boston that was an interview with Lyndon LaRouche earlier that was more or less favorable?
Yes, this was in November 10th, after the election. It was an article, Lyndon LaRouche, You're My Only Hope.
Okay, which, now let me just put this in context, because we've done the preliminary check on this, and if you look over in Seattle and you look up to Boston and to some other places, you find that something has been happening. There is a takeover of these moderately leftist alternate newspapers in various communities by a central group backed by these financiers. There's a paper down in Phoenix, Arizona, called the Phoenix New Times, run by a guy named Michael Lacey, L-A-C-E-Y. Michael Lacey, this is a paper that thrives on revenue from prostitution and pornography. It's unbelievably filthy, and it's a pro-dope publication. So it's the right milieu to be used by these bankers. This guy Lacey and the New Times of Phoenix, since about 2000, starting in the year 2000, has been working to take over dozens of other newspapers. And they have an arm of that, a sales arm and management arm that interfaces with money, called the Ruxton Group. It's owned by Lacey's organization. These people have gone into those papers in Seattle and Boston in recent years, and here's their MO. Here, you can understand what they're all about. Lacey is supposed to be a non-political person. He has no political agenda. When he took over the Village Voice, as approved by the Bush administration directly, in 2003, they made attempts. In 2003, the attempt to take over the Village Voice was canceled because it was in restraint of trade. And in 2005, the Bush administration gave an approval to it. When Lacey took over the Village Voice newspaper in New York City, he immediately canceled every column devoted to attacking George Bush and Cheney.
I think, Tony, one of the relevant points is that a lot of these weeklies, when they were independent weeklies, did some legitimate investigative reporting, especially of the sort of the scandals that one would find in Houston, for example, around Tom DeLay. The Houston Press used to cover the nefarious dealings of Tom DeLay quite frequently.
Right.
And what's happened with this takeover is that an independent voice has been shut down. Now, we look at this on the local side of things and the role of Ruxton. How does this compare with the role of people like Murdoch and Train in shaping a consensus around the insanity of our, or the degeneracy, you might say, of our current society?
It's precisely the same thing. It's a kind of a final thrust into every form of communication in the country. Murdoch, who runs the New York Post and the other right-wing operations, himself took over the Village Voice earlier. This goes beyond that. And I want to point out that there is a Boston centrality to this, going back to the group of Boston fancy families that bred John Train. In Boston, there is a venture capital company called Alta Communications, A-L-T-A. It's inhabited by people from Brown Brothers Harriman, from the Morgan firm. It specializes in taking over alternative news weeklies, internet operations, specialized radio and television programming, and intelligence companies that do data mining and stuff like this. They own 14% of Michael Lacey's company, and they are his venture capital guides. They were the guide to the merger with the Village Voice and to the outreach of the Ruxton Group, which is, I was told by a man who had been involved in both organizations, Lacey's and the other, the stuff that he's taken over. And he described the agenda in terms of communication or ideas as being the same thing as Fox TV's program Cops. Instead of any ideas, that you're subjected to 24-hour a day voyeurism, the kind of investigative articles are the kind that sound like you might be investigating Bush and Cheney, but you end up simply investigating the rear end of your neighbor, and along the way, you're investigating people that are trying to impeach Bush and Cheney.
We have about 7 minutes to go, and I want to bring the two panelists back in again. But I want to encourage people to call in and get copies of this material, to get armed so you can take up the fight to stop this operation, not simply the John Train story, but also the October surprise story, what will be the lead story in the next EIR, the necessity of exposing the Cheney-Bush drive to war, and also the importance of mobilizing the Democratic Party to fight on this next 5.5 weeks before the election. So call us at 800-929-7566, or you can go to the website, LaRouchePAC.com, to get the latest from Lyndon LaRouche, and LaRouchePub.com, to get the latest in the kind of material that we've been discussing with Anton Chaitkin today. So we have about 6 minutes to go. Leandra, did you have a question for Tony?
Yeah, I guess it's just a question about how he sees this this whole situation being framed up, because in The Stranger, it's the actions against us, they've been described as playful tormenting. There have been follow-up blogs on these articles. It's basically, oh, don't torture the LaRouches. Instead, eavesdrop on them, have them stand for 72 hours in 50-degree rooms, and near drown them for weeks. And just really weird
stuff. So it's inciting people to violence against us, really.
And it's this, it's the format of the of this hardcore right-wing fascist group that's controlling Cheney. That's the really the issue, is the identity of our opponents. LaRouche's opponents are the opponents of mankind that we have nailed, and the whole point of our counterintelligence here is to show exactly who is encouraging this. Why would you spend your time as a publication going after LaRouche instead of going after Bush? Well, it happens to be because this administration and the bankers controlling it hired that publication to do it. That's why. Black and white.
And I think to go back to this family foundation question, that the other aspect of this is to just put enough disinformation on the internet to convince people that you really can't know anything and you should stay away. Just go along to get along. Michael, did you have another question for Tony or something else you wanted to add?
Well, I think more on this question of the anti-Tory faction.
Yeah.
If you could, I'd like to sort of pin down something that I had a question on, because in the organizing around this, what came up was, you know, well, who is this guy John Train, right? And what I found was that the best way to characterize this was that he's the guy they sent to get LaRouche. Because you can't separate who these people are from the fact that Lyndon LaRouche is the biggest patriot of the United States that exists, and so this faction is not just an anti-Tory faction, but they're characterized by being against LaRouche. And if you could just elaborate on that question, that'd be helpful.
Tony, let me tell you, we have just a little bit more than 2 minutes, but go ahead.
All right. LaRouche brought back into U.S. politics a tradition and a way of life, really, in politics associated with an earlier American policy and outlook that Franklin Roosevelt had himself brought back in the middle of the 20th century. Before Franklin Roosevelt, that outlook was suppressed in early 20th century under Teddy Roosevelt, Wilson, and Coolidge. Our nation was built massively as a powerful nation by a nationalist, humanist group, starting not only with the American Revolution, but early. They built our industries. They built our railroads. They built our military. Not this group of Wall Street fascists. They never built anything, that group in Wall Street.
But they steal a lot.
They stole everything. They stole. They were set up. Morgan's firm, for example, was set up in the 1870s for the single purpose of trying to destroy the people based in Philadelphia who had built the railroads and the steel mills. And they are now in the final phase of dissolving the physical United States power as they try to target or for assassination or some other thing people that would like to revive that actual basis of U.S. power and the anti-imperialist policy that the United States under Lincoln, under Franklin Roosevelt, to bring that back as U.S. policy today so that we don't lose civilization throughout this world.
I think, Tony, on that, the best thing people could do would be the LaRouche Pact transcript of Lyndon LaRouche's September 6th webcast, The End of the Truman Era, where he identifies precisely the battle we've been discussing today, the fight by FDR to restore the American system in the 1930s, which enabled us to mobilize the industry of this country to win the war in the 1940s, against the fascists who were supported by this John Train banking faction, and then the shift after Roosevelt's death into Trumanism, into the form that today we see as a new global fascist movement called globalization. So I would encourage people to call and ask for this transcript of the LaRouche September 6th webcast. Call us at 800-929-7566, 800-929-7566. Tony, thank you very much for coming on today. Michael and Leandra, good job. And this has been the LaRouche Show. We will be back next Saturday and every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you for listening.